Welcome to What's Ailing the World, the ultimate in reality radio with info that can save your life. On the show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, what created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to, quote-unquote, serve, and commit treason every day by allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, who suppress the natural solutions to all of these problems are available, who are stealing and torturing our children under the guise of child protection. The ability to see the big picture is the critical skill necessary to formulate the solutions we need to bring these psychopaths down. The critical first step for everyone with a conscience is to do your own research, as we have been lied to about everything. The study of language is very revealing. The word lie was put in the word in the middle of the word belief, as when the psychopaths are able to lead the slave work units, i.e. goy, to believe a lie, it becomes their truth. I strongly recommend that you challenge all of your own beliefs until you know the truth. This is not easy, as I discovered when I had to face the fact that the medical profession I had so proudly joined was totally corrupted to do the opposite of the oath taken to first do no harm. I suggest you go to either of my websites, Dr. Carley, drcarley.com, or reversingvaccineinduced, I-N-D-U-C-E-D, diseases.com, and check out the diagrams that I have developed. The first diagram is the cause of all disease on one piece of paper. And then below the diagrams, which you can print out, you can find links to the YouTube of a conference I gave in Chicago where I explained the diagrams. Explaining the diagrams is what I always do when I do conferences. But unfortunately, although I get one or two requests every month to go somewhere, fly somewhere and give a conference, I will no longer travel by air. I will not be groped nor have my DNA unraveled with their scanners. But thankfully, the video is up there that you can check out for yourself. And despite the fact I posted a $10,000 reward on drcarley.com 6 years ago for any white coat to refute any of my information, of course, to this day, I have received no takers. Please remember that compromise and negotiation with evil is impossible. There are many of us actually confronting evil with documented truth. And, of course, once enough people wake up, it will then be imperative to take action. And that's what is going to happen. Either that or we are all going to die. And it's not going to be pretty, I can assure you. If you think my work is important, please tell others about the show. You can support my work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites. You can help friends or family who are too ill to face reality by getting a consult for them. To learn how I do consults, click on the Services tab on my ReversingVaccineInducedDiseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarley@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662. Between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. My toll-free number, which works from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean, is 888-321-6751. If you get a strange message that the number's been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarley1, but I use Skype primarily for my international clients and radio shows. So please call me if you have access to the toll-free number. Or you can email me, but just realize I get so many emails, I may miss it. Better to call. I do not practice medicine nor give medical advice. Rather, I teach you what I would do if I were you, to reverse disease with natural therapies in people and in pets. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carley Archives. Now that I have shows on three different networks, if you go to the Dr. Carley Archives page, that has my Orion Talk Radio, com shows, as well as assorted other shows I've done on other people's shows, especially about vaccines, and also RBN I'm now on, and this is These Changing Times. So just click on whichever place you want to click on. All shows are labeled RBN and Orion. We answer the question, what's ailing America? These Changing Times. The question is, what's ailing the world? Of course, it's all basically the same thing. And unfortunately, I will never run out of answers to those questions. If you have questions or comments during the show, the best thing to do is to enter the chat room and type it in, and our board op will transmit the question to myself and my guest. If you do call in, the number is 785-336-5190, and it's important to mute your phone while waiting to be brought on. Please wait until the second hour to call in so I have an opportunity to introduce the topic of the week. If you haven't yet gotten your colloidal silver generator, I suggest you do that, as we're being barraged with bioweapons every day. Go to reversingvaccineinducediseases.com, click on the link section, and you'll be brought to the generator that I recommend, because now that the FDA has deemed colloidal silver a pesticide, it's just a matter of time before it's no longer available in health food stores as they continue to take away everything that's good and poison us with everything that's bad, because that's how the psychopaths operate. And let me also just say quickly that the views expressed on this show are not the views and opinions of the station, nor its administration, but rather the host, guests, and callers. And on today's show, the answer to what's ailing the world is Patricia Bankster Stealing Everything, with my most requested guest, who comes on this show every month, and that would be J.B. Campbell. You can check out his blog at jbcampbellextremismonline.com. And basically, J.B. Campbell was born in Chicago in 1946, grew up in Oak Brook, Illinois, then the polo capital of the world. And now it's the corruption capital of the world, it and Chicago, etc. Funny how that is working out. He graduated from Carmel High School in California, raced cars in Australia and England for 2 years, 3 years of college, mostly at the University of Nevada at Reno, operated the School of Slide Control to train racing drivers, became a commercial oil field diver in Texas and Louisiana. So he's done all kinds of things. But probably the most important thing that he did, which has helped him see the world as it really is, was when he joined the British South Africa Police in Rhodesia in the early 70s and was a section officer in the support unit, which is the anti-terrorist group. He was the first American in that group since 1923. He started the modern militia movement in 1989 with his book, The New American Man, A Call to Arms, which lasted until 95 with the state-sponsored destruction of the OKC Federal Building, an obvious false flag meant to destroy the militia movement. The State Department considers him a mercenary. The FBI considers him a problem. The Secret Service considers him a terrorist, and he could not care less. He now makes his living as a drilling supervisor and is writing the most amazing essays on his blog. Today I want to cover the latest one, which you can find at jbcampbellextremismonline.com, entitled The Tribunes. So welcome to the show, Bruce, and please start out anywhere you would like. We have 2 hours without commercials to get this information out to the people.
Okay. Hello there, Rebecca. as we know today, or this season, is the upcoming Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur, the Jewish so-called holiday. And as some of us know, the day is spent when the blessed day comes, the Jews recite an oath three times during the day called the Kol Nidre. And this is a very special oath, not a prayer, but an oath that they take, which absolves them from having to tell the truth or abiding by contracts or agreements or whatever for the next year in advance. It's the most amazing concept for non-Jews. And when they're hit with it, they just can't believe that this could possibly be true. Anyway, I mean, it was the subject of the first talking picture back in, I think, 1929 or 1930, called The Jazz Singer with Al Jolson. And Al Jolson played a young jazz singer whose father was a cantor in the synagogue. And the father, the cantor's job is to sing the Kol Nidre, you know, to violins or just a cappella in the synagogue. Well, the old man got sick and couldn't perform his cantor duties, so he was hoping that his young, talented son would step into his shoes and sing the Kol Nidre that day or tomorrow, whenever it was in the time frame. But the young jazz singer didn't want to do that because, you know, it wasn't hip, and he was a hipster, and he didn't want to be in that old-timey milieu, so he just said no. And of course, naturally, he, at the end of the show, he agreed to sing the Kol Nidre. Well, luckily for them, it was not in English, it was in Hebrew, so nobody knew what he was saying. You know, the moviegoers weren't aware of what this mournful tune really said.
How convenient.
Yeah, but it was kind of one of these in-your-face things that the Jews can't help but do. You know, they they like to rub it in your face and then get offended if you get offended. Anyway, so, jump forward to about 1992. I was living in L.A., and there was a talk show host named Bill Handel, who today has a nationally syndicated show called Handel on the Law. He's a Jewish lawyer in L.A., and he gives very dubious advice, legal advice, to the suckers who call in. And he's, you know, he puts people down, and he says, "You got no case," and he just has a good time making people look small and stupid. But back in 92, he was on the 50,000-watt station in L.A. called KFI. And it's a big one. You know, it's like KABC. It's 50,000 watts. It covers the whole region. So for some crazy reason, he announced about a week in advance that the next Sunday we're going to have a show for you anti-Semites out there. I'm going to call it, "Why Do You Hate the Jews?" So all you anti-Semites can call in and tell the world why you hate us so much. And he admitted as the week went on that he had been advised very hard by the Jewish community not to do this. This will backfire, they said. You mustn't do this. But he knew better. And he said, "No, I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to show what a bunch of idiots you are. I don't care what you say. I'll give you an hour. Give you people an hour to call in and make your case. And then I'll give the Jewish community in Los Angeles 2 hours to rebut everything you've said and show how stupid you are." So finally the day came. Somebody said, "Hey, why don't you call in there? That could be pretty neat." I said, "Okay." So he came on, and I think I was like the second or third caller. Ordinarily, when you call a radio show, you know, as a truth teller, you want to get on the show, you gotta con your way on past the producer. Producer right. screens calls and decides whether or not you should be on that show. So ordinarily, anyway, the screener said to me, "Well, do you hate Jews?" I said, "Yeah." "Okay, how come?" I said, "Well, because you're the worst liars on earth." "Okay. That's good." So pretty soon my turn came. Bill Handel says, "Okay, we got Bruce in Sherman Oaks. Good morning, Bruce. Why do you hate Jews?" Well, I said, you want to know why people hate? No, he said, I want to know why you hate Jews. Well, I said, because you're the most notorious liars on the face of the earth. Okay. Okay, what lies do we tell? Well, pretty much everything you say is a lie, but of course you're licensed to lie by your rabbis. Licensed to lie by our rabbis. Okay, Bruce, how does that work? Well, I said, what is your holiest prayer, Bill? There's Bill.
What did Bill say?
Bill said, well, I don't know. Well, I said, isn't it the Kol Nidre? The Kol Nidre, he said. Well, Bruce, you know, I've had 5 years of Hebrew school and 3 years of law school. And to be honest with you, I can't remember how the Kol Nidre goes. Well, I said, well, Bill, I can read it to you if you like. And here's where he made his 24-karat mistake. He said, well, go ahead. And I had it in front of me. It was from Henry Ford's book, The International Jew. And I read it out. And it was pretty shocking. I said, see, Bill, this is why people hate you, because this is your way. You lie, you cheat, you steal, but you're authorized to do it by your so-called religion. So, I said another thing. You know, you called that Gentile gal a few minutes ago, you called her a shiksa. Yeah, so? Well, there you go. In your lingo, that means dirty, unclean, non-kosher piece of meat. Oh, Bruce, I don't think so. I said, you don't think so. Do you deny it? Well, I just don't think that could possibly be true. Yeah, I know. It's like goyim. It means cattle. I mean, that's how you view us. You're the cowboys and we're the cows. So he finally got rid of me, and there were so many people like me on this show that they had to give us the 2 hours, and they extended the whole thing. So they give the Jews the last 2 hours. Well, the first Jew who called in was a rabbi from Los Angeles. Bill said, good morning, Rabbi. What do you have to say? Oh, Bill, he said, that fellow who was talking about the Kol Nidre. Yes, Rabbi. Oh, Bill, he was wrong. I know he was, Rabbi, but I want you to tell us how he was wrong. Well, Bill, now, Kol Nidre is an agreement between the person and God. Now, let's say that you make a resolution not to come within a mile of a chocolate mousse. Well, God knows that you can't keep this promise, so God lets you off the hook with the Kol Nidre. Well, you know, all across Los Angeles, you could hear millions of Jewish hands slapping Jewish foreheads. Oh, my God. And Bill Handel had to say, okay, thank you, Rabbi. That was great. That was about the extent of the opposition to the Kol Nidre. It's pretty lame. But I think you have the Kol Nidre in front of you. You can probably tell.
Yes, I do. Yes, and I'll let the listeners decide if this applies to eating a chocolate mousse. He who wishes that his vows and oaths shall have no value, stand up at the beginning of the year and say, all vows which I shall make during the year shall be of no value. It would be nice if we could... there's a comment by the person writing the website. Let me continue. All vows, obligations, oaths, or anathemas, pledges of all names which we have vowed, sworn, devoted, or bound ourselves to, from this day of atonement until the next day of atonement, we repent aforehand of them all. They shall all be deemed absolved, forgiven, nullified, annulled, void, and made of no effect. They shall not be binding, nor have any power. The vows shall not be reckoned as vows. The obligation shall not be obligatory, nor the oaths considered as oaths. And the place that this really hits me is with the Hippocratic Oath, which has become the hypocritical oath. And that's how I realize, because, of course, the medical mafia is controlled by Jews just like every other area of our lives. And this is why doctors have become murderers and are killing people outright or sometimes just slowly with chemo and other things. So this is a real shocker. I encourage people to look this up for yourself. There's many websites that carry this. And there's the Jew apologists that, like Bruce said, they make an excuse. I've never heard anybody saying it applies to a chocolate mousse, but, you know, pretty much the same ridiculous stuff, that it's just their vows between them and God. Well, then why does it say all vows, obligations, oaths, etc., etc.? So it's self-evident that, like Bruce said, it's in their religion that if they take a vow, whatever the vow may be, they actually, you know, at the beginning of the year, which, of course, we just went through their Jewish New Year, so now we're at the beginning of their next year, and they started off by saying that they're not going to keep any of their vows. And obviously, they're doing a very good job.
Yeah, I mean, this is the whole essence of our predicament. We are controlled by lies, mainly Jewish lies. And the Kol Nidre is, you know, at the heart of the matter. They're not required to tell the truth or to live up to any agreements they make.
And I just want to also mention, since the legal profession, I call them land sharks, are also controlled by the Jews, this is, of course, why they develop contracts. Because, in my opinion, the purpose of a contract is to put forth something which on its face may appear to, you know, be some kind of an agreement between two parties. But, you know, they've always got their loopholes in there, their fine print. And, in fact, that's how they nullify the contract. I mean, how many times does it happen? You sign a contract. I actually had a woman on my show 2 weeks ago, an 86-year-old woman that's been through the legal system. She wrote a book, in the den with the blood sucking, blood suckers, talking about her experience with the legal field. And of course, this is how it works. One of the most amazing things that she mentioned in her book is that she had signed a contract with a lawyer, and she tried to get out of the contract because of the fact he was basically not only doing the wrong thing, but, you know, robbing her while he was doing the wrong thing. And she tried to get a copy of the contract, and she was actually told that she did not have a right to have a copy of the contract. You know, you can't make this stuff up. So it gets ridiculous. But as more and more people are going through these experiences, of course, more and more people are having to face the fact that this is our reality. John Kaminsky actually stated that reality is a Jewish production. In a recent show I did with him, and I kind of like that quote. So this is why we have to educate people as to who the enemy is. The enemies are the Jews. They are psychopaths. They have no conscience. That's self-evident. And we have to basically, you know, quarantine them, find a way to put them off someplace. I don't know what. I had come up with an idea of having every agency, every area of our lives, you know, doctors, lawyers, education departments, whatever, you know, basically expose the psychopaths within their professions so that we could just basically have a massive exposure of who these people are and what they're doing, because they're doing the opposite of what they purport they're going to do. And that's why we're in the situation we're in. And I just want to really strongly suggest that all of you go to J.B. Campbell, extremismonline.com, and read his latest essay, The Tribunes. And I love this idea. So let me just read the first paragraph here. A tribune is an unofficial defender of individual rights, a person who defends people from the government. In Roman times, tribunes were elected by the citizens to protect them from the patricians, who are the rich. Today, tribunes are volunteers. And you had mentioned later in your article that you had wished that you had used that term instead of the militia back when you started the militia, because, of course, the militia then brings up, you know, what it says in the Constitution about, you know, an armed militia, and then of course the Supreme Court come and say, oh, they're talking about the military, you know, and they have ways to corrupt that. But you give the most excellent explanation of the banksters that I've ever read. And if you could please educate our listeners, many of them I'm sure have an inkling of this whole Federal Reserve scam and what it's really all about. But please do, you know, let the listeners know what you have found in your research, because this is the most important thing that people have to realize that they're using to not only control us, but to rob us blind. And then I also loved it when you said austerity is a banker code for you must have less so that we can have more, you know. And thankfully, some of the people in Europe are saying, you know, screw your austerity. We're not going to take this anymore. But, you know, please do enlighten the listeners about what you've written in this excellent essay.
Well, the best explanation, I think, is to be found in William Still's video called The Secret of Oz, O-Z. And he really woke me up. I mean, I didn't realize how simple the problem is to solve. And then looking at what happened in Germany in the 20s and early 30s, and how Hitler unlocked the secret and showed the world what was possible in terms of recovery, the financial recovery from a crisis. Now, in the Germans were accused of starting World War I, which they did not, but because they lost that war, they were found guilty by the victors, America, England, France, so forth, and were forced to pay reparation payments. Now, this was kind of unheard of in this scale. The Germans, and the only reason it worked for the Allies was because the Germans have this unfortunate tendency to adhere to agreements they make, no matter how onerous or unfair or bogus or based on fraud. The Germans always do what they say they're going to do or what they're told to do. And even Hitler, as I said in my little essay, Hitler complained of this, what he called that goddamn German objectivity, always willing to see it from the enemy's viewpoint. That's their weak spot. Excuse me. So, as we know, the reparation payments to the victorious Allies bankrupted Germany by the early 1920s. So much so that, you know, we heard about the wheelbarrows full of marks that were required to go to the store and buy a loaf of bread, because they had to hyperinflate their currency to make these incredible reparation payments to the Allies. Well, naturally, the Germans lost all their gold to the Federal Reserve, and they had nothing. And people were starving. There were hundreds of thousands of Germans starved to death because of the austerity that was put on them by the bankers, the private bankers who hadn't even loaned anything. This is the whole secret here. The bankers don't lend money, they lend credit. They credit your account. Where does this credit come from? Well, nobody knows. It comes out of thin air. All of a sudden they say, okay, you have now $1 billion in your account. You can spend it with us if you like. But they have to pay the loans back in cash plus interest, which is impossible. You can't do it. As I've always said, if everybody has to pay back more than he borrows, and everybody does, where does the extra come from? Okay, well, you got to inflate the money supply to pay the interest. So it's a totally Jewish concept. And when you're trying to explain this to people, they kind of go, I'm not sure I follow you there. So I'm trying to make this as simple as possible because, you know, we have to simplify. I mean, it has to be simplified so that I can understand it, and I have to simplify it so that other people can understand it.
Yes.
Okay. The whole thing is, governments must not be allowed to borrow money from private lenders or from anybody. I mean, this is totally illegal, totally bogus, totally uncalled for. Any government must issue its own currency, debt-free, no interest involved, in amounts that are necessary for business and living plus growth. And this is what Germany did. Hitler came to power in January or so of 1933, January, March, can't remember exactly what month, but the same time Franklin Roosevelt came to power, the same period, same year, same month. Both of them came to power over countries which were devastated by the Great Depression. But Germany had the extra problem of reparation payments. Not only was it in the Great Depression, but it had to make these stupid payments, which they couldn't afford. So Hitler first said to the British ambassador, he said, there are going to be no more reparation payments. And the British ambassador got very angry, so I shall inform my minister. Go ahead. But there were no more payments, and nothing could be done, because the Allies knew that they had really torn the rear end out of it, and they had raped the German people for all they were good for, plus. So then Hitler thought, well, what do we do now? I mean, how do we get out of this mess? We've got no money. We've got no gold. We've got nothing. We can't feed ourselves. What do we do? So fortunately, there had been a precedent in America back in 1862. Abraham Lincoln, for very bad reasons, he'd gone to the banks to borrow money so that he could wage war against the southern states that had seceded from the Union. Well, the banker said, yeah, we'll lend you the money, but it'll be a 34% interest rate. And even Lincoln said, well, that doesn't sound too reasonable. And so he just went back and ordered his Treasury Department to issue U.S. notes, United States notes. And that's they were called greenbacks, and that's how he financed everything, with these U.S. notes. They weren't backed by anything, but they were accepted. I mean, nobody had a choice. You either take U.S. notes in payment or nothing. Okay, well, they took the U.S. notes. You know, it turned out to be very successful. And everybody was quite pleased with these U.S. notes. They weren't paying the bankers any interest rates. And they were kept in circulation long after the war. Finally, they were retired because the bankers were so furious. They didn't want any of these U.S. notes circulating because they weren't getting any money on them. This whole thing started with Alexander Hamilton back when we were under the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union. In other words, there was no central government authorized by the Articles of Confederation. Representatives would meet in the Congress, but they didn't really, they weren't able to do anything because they couldn't force anybody, to pay anything. So the bankers, they wanted to be paid back for their war loans of the Revolutionary War. So they got their agent, Alexander Hamilton, to persuade George Washington that a new system was needed. And the system was codified and created in secret at the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia as the U.S. Constitution. And this Constitution created the upper house and lower house, called the Senate and the House of Representatives. It created the presidency, and it created the Supreme Court and the whole federal court system. And it was a total disaster. It was the central government that we so hate and fear today. It was created by the U.S. Constitution. Well, it was so frightening to some observant people, such as Patrick Henry, George Mason, William Lee. They said, well, we need to be protected from this thing. We need some kind of code of rights, you know, people's rights. And the Federalists, the ones who created this monster, said, no, you don't. we're very much interested in your rights, and you just trust us. And the guy said, right. No, we're not going to trust you. We have to have something written down. Well, this took 4 years. But finally, we got the so-called Bill of Rights, which were added to protect us from the Constitution. I mean, that's how bad the Constitution is. We had to have a Bill of Rights to protect us from it. This is all the Constitution is a seven-part program on how to run a central government. That's all it is. And then the next ten articles are the so-called Bill of Rights to protect us from this monster. Now, anybody who believes in the Constitution, like Ron Paul, anybody who thinks that the Constitution, if it were only followed, would protect us from this monster, has never read a thing, or is looking for the license that it gives them over us,
or is totally bamboozling the public to make them believe that it's a good thing, which obviously is what Ron Paul is doing, being the high-level Mason he is, etc. Go ahead.
Right, and the Constitution, these framers in Philadelphia, what they did was they used Masonic rules of order for creating this Constitution. The Constitution is based on bylaws and rules of procedure in the Masonic lodges. That's how we got it, because all the founders were Masons.
Exactly.
So anyway, turns out everything is constitutional. Everything the government does, you know, the Supreme Court, virtually in every case, finds it constitutional. For example, the drafting of militiamen in 1918 to force them to go to war in Europe. Well, the Supreme Court found that to be constitutional. Now, how in the world this could be, we may wonder, but this is the nature of this constitutional monster that we are under. Everything is constitutional. Slavery was constitutional. Denying women the vote was constitutional. Everything, you know, a few things that Roosevelt did were so outrageous that the Supreme Court said, well, the National Recovery Act is, you know, pure fascism or communism. We can't do that. It was done anyway, but they just changed the name. Everything is constitutional, including...
I just wanted to bring up the most recent outrageous example of this Obamacare crap. I mean, the idea that people like me, I have not used traditional medicine in 15 years, I will never get insurance because I have insurance on my car. If I get in a car accident, that is the only reason I would ever go to a hospital, and they would probably have to take me there unconscious for me to agree to it. And, of course, the insurance will mandate vaccines, mammography, which causes cancer, all these other things. They do not cover anything that works. And so this is another outrageous example. We're supposed to live in a capitalist society. If we actually had capitalism, nobody would be going for mainstream medical care because it kills you. And so this is the most recent example of this, when the Supreme Court came out and said that, you know, well, it's actually a tax and therefore it's constitutional. You know, that was just so outrageous. It's mind-boggling. And I'm hoping many people will just say no, pay the tax, pay the extortion fee, whatever, but do not go along with this because it's going to end up badly. But go ahead.
Yeah, on that subject, I just read that millions of Americans are now going to be billed for not complying with the Obamacare rules.
So yes.
That should be interesting. Mm-hmm. Anyway, back in 1933, Hitler said, well, I mean, Lincoln issued a debt-free currency, and it seemed to be quite successful. Why can't we do that? And eventually, he did that. He issued debt-free currency starting out with scrip in three or four basic industries like highway building and another needed industry, steel industry.
Yeah, can you give a definition of scrip? I'm not sure. I don't know what that word scrip means.
Well, it's kind of what they call an ersatz are replacement currency. It's, okay. It's like coupons, and it's, they're redeemable. They're usually good. They're issued to certain types of workers for certain things. But and then they, you can trade them in for money, and but they're not generally circulated throughout the economy, just in a certain industry. But that didn't last too long because he finally realized that there's no reason why the mark, the Reichsmark itself, couldn't be issued debt-free. That's what he did. In 1933, the Reichsmark was issued by the German government, free of all debt, no interest payments on it to anybody. And it was issued judiciously, but in ways that allowed for growth. And the announcement was made to the world that from here on, you will accept payment from us in Reichsmarks. And it is backed, as you people stole all our gold, so it is backed by the productivity of the German worker. That is what the Reichsmark is based upon. And of course, as we know, there's nobody more productive than the German worker. And within 18 months, it was so successful that the impoverished, starving German workers were able to take paid holiday cruise vacations and start putting down payments on homes and cars. And it was the German economic miracle. And it was the most fantastic, wonderful thing in the history of economics. And Germany alone began to prosper, while America, mighty America under Franklin Roosevelt and the Federal Reserve, continued to wallow in misery and despair and starvation. We now know, thanks to some Russian researchers, that millions of Americans starved to death here during the Depression, but those deaths were covered up by doctors as natural causes or just whatever. But now we know that people suffered horribly during the, how could they not? My wife and I suffered horribly in our own Depression, until I got back to work. So I know how horrible the Depression must have been. I mean, I've known Americans, growing up, who would always kind of obsess about their experiences in the Depression. I would used to think as a kid, oh, get over it. But I know now, you can't get over it. Once you've gone through something as degrading and humiliating and as frightening as a Depression, you never get over it. So anyway, Hitler showed the world that we don't need any banker loans. We don't need anything. Oh, the whole secret to life is that the government of any country must issue its own currency debt-free. And the Jewish bankers who prosper from our misery, in my opinion, they need to be hanged. Not just Jewish bankers, but all bankers. Banking is based on fraud. And I think the fraudsters who have ruined us so terribly have to be punished in the most impressive way. They have to be hanged for their crimes against humanity. Not just in America, everywhere.
I totally agree. And actually, in your essay, you mentioned that this government licensed fraud, this whole idea of usury, interest, etc., it was actually illegal until 1913, but was legalized then with the passage of the Federal Reserve Act. So this is how they work. They come in with their, attorneys, and they come up with these ideas, as you said, based on Masonic traditions and things of that nature. And inventing this whole idea, it's really funny to me because, of course, when I was a kid, my parents would tell me, well, money doesn't grow on trees. And there was a point I actually thought about writing a book for children, Money Doesn't Grow on Trees, but it comes out of thin air. In other words, to, basically try to teach young children about this whole fraud, because that whole idea of money not growing on trees it's created out of thin air, and then we pay interest on them for printing it. It is so insane. Only a Jew could come up with this idea.
That's true, and the solution is so simple. And I recommend everybody watch The Secret of Oz. You can get it for free online. It's a wonderful explanatory film. Nobody does it better than Bill Still. And he shows how completely unnecessary interest payments to private lenders are. And, of course, it will destroy it. I don't care how small the interest payment is. It can't be, no matter what it is, it's going to destroy the money system that you have. These poor people over in Europe who are demanded by bankers to go into austerity to pay them back. This is a hanging offense. And actually, as you pointed out, originally in our history, the founders wanted the death penalty for counterfeiters. And that's what the first and second banks of the U.S. were. They were counterfeiting, currency. And then Andrew Jackson defeated the second U.S. bank and took away all its assets, bankrupted it, and never came back again until 1913. They finally were able to scam us one more time. But the solution is so simple, and we could be prosperous in a matter of months. Now, quantitative easing is okay as long as there's no interest involved. I mean, we have to do this to pay our way. But the secret is not to pay any interest to private lenders. That's the lethal aspect of banking.
And I just want to bring up, because you said that word counterfeiter. It always cracks me up whenever you hear a story on the news where somebody's been caught counterfeiting money. In other words, they're printing money, out of thin air. It's the same thing that Jewish banksters are doing. But because, they're not, approved Jewish banksters, then that's a large fine, and they will be, hunted down by the Treasury Department and, put in federal prison for many, many years. And isn't it true, didn't Iceland just kind of sort of basically do the same thing that Germany did and say, sorry, we're not paying your interest? Didn't they just do that recently?
I believe so, and they're going to prosecute these crooked bankers that have ruined them.
Mm-hmm.
Now that they're coming back into sanity. Yeah.
And that's what we need to do.
Absolutely. And we could do it so easily. But, the Congress has to be overthrown. The government has to be overthrown, and there's no peaceful way to do this. But that's how we became a country in the first place. And that's what, I keep having to point out to people who are a little timid or a little reluctant to see this. America became a country by the violent overthrow of their government. Of course, they weren't Americans then. They were Englishmen, and they overthrew the English government. So we Americans must now overthrow the American government.
Because it's basically Zionist occupied. So it's still a foreign government as far as I'm concerned. And, of course, one of the main problems that we have, there's three types of people that are interfering with us doing this. We have the fear mongers, and of course Alex Jones is a perfect example of that. We have the people that telling us it's too late, basically it's gone too far and there's nothing we can do. And then of course my favorite is the people that say, oh, just love your psychopath, just send them love, this touchy-feely crap, that if you put enough love out into the ethers that, eventually they will develop a conscience. Well, you can't make a scorpion not be a scorpion. It's just not, in their nature to stop doing what they do. So these techniques are very successful so far, and of course, especially the fear one, you know, and when you think about it, for them to totally take over the planet and destroy everything that matters and kill off 90% of us, mainly with fear. The idea of making people believe that there's nothing they can do, I mean, that's the most amazing psyop that I've ever even imagined, that they would be able to, you know, carry this off to the degree that they have. And, of course, that's where people have to realize is that it's not over and that they are being exposed and more people are waking up, and it is going to get ugly because they're not going to go peacefully into the night.
Yeah, so really the reason for World War II to destroy Germany was because of this magnificent, fantastic economic recovery that they accomplished by issuing debt-free currency. But this was the worst possible crime to our patrician bankers who exist as parasites on us through interest. So Germany had to be destroyed, and it was, you know, beyond all recognition. Today it's just a nothing place. It's, the Germans are still very industrious and innovative and wonderful in their engineering. But politically, you know, they provide submarines to Israel. So,
and mind-boggling.
So, yeah.
And so, not only that, it's illegal in Germany. I mean, you can actually be prosecuted and go to jail for saying anything against the Jews, which is so mind-boggling to me. After everything that's gone down, after all the people who are actually revealing the truth that you've explained in your essay and many others have as well, that the German people who were one of the prime targets of this are not allowed to speak the truth. That's really sad.
Yeah, they committed the ultimate crime, which was to disfranchise Jews. And this is what we must do. We must disfranchise Jews from all aspects of our lives in this country. It's a beginning. But, you know, John Kennedy, I'm not a fan of the Kennedys, but I must say that John Kennedy distinguished himself in several ways back in his brief time in office. In April 1963, he ordered the Treasury Department to issue United States notes, essentially the same notes that Abraham Lincoln had issued and the same thing as Hitler had issued in his time. Well, the third guy to do it was John F. Kennedy, and he issued over $4 billion in United States notes, and not a penny went to the Federal Reserve gangsters, which we can just imagine infuriated them. His remark was, well, neither the Federal Reserve note nor the U.S. note is backed by anything, but at least we don't pay interest on the U.S. note, so I'm going to issue these. Now, it was the beginning of this war against the Federal Reserve. And I don't, you know, one good guy, I don't care who he is, can't do this successfully. You've got to have a gang. You've got to have the people behind you. Unfortunately, he did not explain sufficiently to the people what he was doing, but it was the most significant thing, I would say, that he ever did in those 1,000 days in office. The reason he got killed.
Well, I'm sure that was highly involved. And, you know, one would wonder, you know, the president is supposed to have, you know, basically control of the Secret Service and, you know, the CIA and NSA and all the rest of it. And one would wonder, you know, why he wasn't able to round up enough people of conscience to basically, you know, get rid of anybody who was going to cause a problem down the line. I think he was very naive as far as that goes, that he didn't make some kind of plan up to take out anybody that he felt was going to interfere. There's actually YouTube videos of him talking about this secret group that controls the world. So obviously he knew what was going on, and even though his father, you know, was a part of the elite that was, wasn't he a rum runner and things of that nature? I mean, all of these people that are extremely wealthy now made their money back in the day by committing crimes. So his family was no different. But apparently he, although in his personal life didn't have a conscience, as far as, you know, the future of the country, apparently he did. But he didn't take steps to make sure that he wasn't going to get a bullet in his head.
Yeah, you stop and think about it. The Secret Service is in charge of prosecuting or investigating counterfeiting. That's their, that's one of their main jobs. It may be their main job is counterfeiting.
Right.
Secondary job is protecting the president. But their main function, you know, most of those guys do is chase down counterfeiters. So they're actually working for the counterfeiters, the Federal Reserve. And the Secret Service was really responsible for Kennedy's assassination. If you watch the Zapruder film carefully, don't watch the passengers, but instead watch the driver, a guy named Bill Greer, the Secret Service driver, driving the limo. He brings the limo to a stop down at the bottom of the hill. He's looking backwards. He stops the car and so that Clint Hill could jump off the second car and run forward and jump on the death car. But you watch Greer looking backward, and he's waiting until the headshot is made. And then as soon as it's made, he turns around and gasses it and takes off.
Mm-hmm.
So, really, I mean, the Secret Service was responsible for the assassination in so many ways, but that was the main way. I don't think that shot could have been made reliably if that car had been going at proper speed. It would have been too difficult to make that headshot. But he brought it to a virtual standstill, so much so that the motorcycle cops nearly crashed into the back of it. They were totally unprepared for the vehicle to stop. And then, as I said, Clint Hill could actually get off the second car, which was quite a ways back, and run forward and jump on the bumper of the limo. So,
Which, of course, is why we see Jackie trying to get out of the car, because she's realizing, uh-oh, we got a problem. You know, I mean, obviously some people say she was trying to grab onto the pieces of his brain that were coming out of his head. I mean, that's ridiculous. You know, she obviously must have realized what was going on. And then, of course, to have to participate in that whole Lyndon Johnson swearing-in thing and all the rest of it, you know, knowing what happened. And that's one thing that really disgusts me about Caroline Kennedy, because, you know, obviously they took out her brother. You know, Jackie sold out and married a Jew just to protect herself. They still killed her with cancer. But here we have Caroline. She married a Jew as well. And, you know, she's supporting the Democrats and all the rest of the crap, knowing exactly what she knows about all of these things, and helping to create the hell that we live in for her children to be part of. I guess believing that they'll be, you know, considered untouchable because, you know, they have aligned themselves with these monsters.
Yeah, the Kennedys are, you know, they were supposed to be our new royalty. And I must say I kind of admired the guy that was killed, John F. Kennedy Jr. I thought he was a pretty decent guy, and he was probably going to run for Senate in New York, mm-hmm. but Hillary couldn't allow that. I'm sure personally that he was assassinated with an airplane
Definitely.
Blowing up in the sky.
Definitely.
But the rest of the Kennedys are pretty trashy, and John F. Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy were arrogant. You know, they treated everybody pretty badly. I do admire some of the things John F. Kennedy did, but I realize that he treated people badly. He was not loyal. He came from a very bad father, Joe Kennedy, you know, trained these boys to treat women with contempt and treat women very badly. And that was their training. And so I wrote years ago, the Secret Service came to my house. I'd written a piece back in 91 called Executive Action. And I started out by saying, Jack Kennedy deserved what he got, you know, in many ways. He was not a good guy. I do admire his stand on the U.S. note in the Vietnam War. I think I do. I mean, I think he was going to pull out of Vietnam. That was an Eisenhower deal. And he did put the pressure on Israel about their nukes. So there are things he did that were very good. But as you said, and as on a personal level, he just made too many enemies. He was just too arrogant and contemptuous of other people.
Right. And of course, obviously, Brother Ted sees all of this and says, okay, I've got to totally sell out or they're going to take me down. Of course, eventually they did. They gave him brain cancer, and that can't be a nice way to die. But, you know, he continued the sellout, you know, and that's why they let him off with his little incident there where the woman, I forget her name, drowned, you know, and he just, like, walked away and did nothing about it, things of that nature. And that's what they teach these people. It's like either you're going to go along with the program, you're going to sell your soul for cash, or you're going to have a problem. And that's one thing that amazes me. You and I, and there's others like us who will never sell out no matter what happens, but there's so many people who do. And that's one of our main problems, in my opinion, is that, you know, they just believe if I do what I'm told and just go along with the program, they'll leave me alone. Well, they're not leaving you alone. They're spraying you with chemtrails and pesticides and poisoning the food and the water and everything else they're doing. So doing nothing is not working. You know, we all have to stand up and do the right thing. And I love what you wrote at the towards the end of the essay here, that, let me just read this quickly. Debt-free currency must be the revolutionary goal of the resistance movement and our revolutionary war for independence. By the Tribunes, as you're now pointing out, we should be calling ourselves. In our case, it will be a civil war, because in a civil war, the two or more sides are fighting for supremacy and for control of the government. This was not the case in 1861 through 5, since the Southerners wanted no part of the Washington government and sought no control of it. They only wanted out. But that can't be for us, since we've seen how Washington treats all independence movements everywhere in the world. Washington enforces the Federal Reserve's monetary fraud and imposes it on the world. When Washington no longer exists as the Fed's brutal enforcer, and the Congress issues debt-free U.S. notes, and the Federal Reserve members have been publicly hanged throughout the country, the rest of the world will follow suit. I totally agree with you. I mean, what other choice is there?
Yeah, we've got our situation in America is that we've got thugs running wild now, thugs in uniform, thugs in three-piece suits. But unfortunately, America has been sissified largely through religion. I see religion as a machine for making men sissies. I don't see any strength coming out of any religion. There's no determination to win over the thugs. In fact, Christianity pretty much prohibits resistance. I've never seen a program for victory in any part of the Christian instruction manual. You're not allowed to go against the Jews as a Christian. In fact, Christians pretty much are the defense mechanism. Christianity gives the Jews license to run wild. So
exactly. As a matter of fact, let me just mention, because this really blew my mind. Of course, most of Christianity has been Zionized. I live in North Carolina in the Bible Belt, and you can't find a Christian church that doesn't have the word Zion in its, title, in its whatever church name. And, of course, basically it's all about supporting Israel, blah, blah, blah. But there is a group who talk about the Kenites, basically, you know, the synagogue of Satan, the serpent seed line, et cetera, et cetera. And I was shocked to find out, I just was sent a YouTube video entitled The Kenites, K-E-N-I-T-E-S, colon, the DNA of Satan. And I started listening to this, and they're talking about, you know, the serpent seed line and all the rest of it. But at about 18 minutes in this YouTube video, they actually stated that, you know, we are forbidden. You know, even though they're telling you about the synagogue of Satan and these psychopaths are destroying everything that matters, but we are forbidden to do anything about it. We have to wait for Christ to come back. Now, that whole idea is just so bizarre to me. So if you know that you're being murdered by the doctors or by the chemtrail sprayers or whatever the case may be, if your children are being raped, tortured, sacrificed, whatever the case may be, you're supposed to do nothing and just wait for Christ to come back? How can that be? That does not compute. I don't see how any people with conscience can say, all right, I got to offer my suffering up to God and just let it go. I just don't get that.
You can just hear the Jews laughing at that one. You know, it is just so preposterous.
But I know. But it's working.
Groups eat it. Yeah, they eat it up.
I know.
I think what it is, it's a license to do nothing. Because
you
know, people want the license not to do the right thing, not to be forced to do something. I used to, you know, talk to people, and I realized they were uneasy hearing the things I was saying, because it kind of put an obligation on them, now that they knew something, to do something about it. They don't want to be obligated to do that. So
it's easier. It's easier to do nothing. That's the
religion,
easy way.
Religion gives you that excuse. Religion says, don't do anything, and this is God's way. Oh, okay, fine. So we've got the lazy people. But what I'm mostly concerned with are the sissies. And how do boys become sissified men later in life? And the main way is through religion, because they're just not allowed to do anything. And as I said, tell my Christian friends, you know, the church always supports the government. It always does.
Right.
Because otherwise it would lose its tax exemption.
Right. And there's, I don't remember, I read the Bible once and I said, this does not compute. But I know there's some citation in there where it actually says that God created the government. Well, if God created this government, what kind of God is that? That's what I would ask. But, of course, I agree with you. The religion is very important because, basically, you know, it's just like I said, do nothing because, you know, God's going to take care of it down the line. Of course, we don't know how many eons we're going to have to go through this torture till we get to that point, if it ever happens. But also, there are many other ways that men are being sissified through chemicals, especially synthetic estrogens like pesticides and BPA, that they're drinking. They're being, you know, sidebarred by the different games. You know, basically, let's watch the game, things of that nature. They've lost their protective instinct, and that is very disturbing to me. And especially, I talk to parents all the time. You know, well, they don't want to vaccinate their children. Okay, so don't vaccinate your children. Well, then they can't go to school. Well, that's a lie because there are exemptions, but let's pretend there weren't. So then homeschool them. I mean, do you care about your children or not? I mean, that's the answer you have to ask yourself. You know, why are you allowing this satanic government to, you know, control your children's education, which is nothing more than mind-wiping propaganda and exposure to all kinds of toxins and things of that nature, the men are not protecting their own families. So that's what's really sad. How can we motivate them to, you know, even act on a bigger level, like you're doing?
Yeah, I know. Like that guy asked Louis Armstrong, you know, how do you play the horn like that? And Armstrong said, well, if you have to ask, you're never going to know. So, I mean, you have to be motivated. You have to be driven to love freedom and to hate evil. You know, we have to have this pure and perfect hatred of the government and of the Jews who have done this to us and ruined our lives. I mean, what are we waiting for? We've got nothing to lose. They've taken away pretty much everything. Now
we have nothing to lose. Wait a minute. I just want to say, because I say on my shows all the time, you are already dead, people. They have so many ways to take you out. As a matter of fact, it was amazing to me. I get the Charlotte Observer, my local paper here, every day just to find out what they're feeding the sheep. And an excellent example was given in today's paper, page 1A. You can check this out at charlotteobserver.com. Three-page segment on cancer and chemotherapy. And if this is an example of a Jew idea, basically, of course, we know, first of all, they're creating cancer through vaccines and other special virus cancer program viruses and things of that nature. So the first they give you cancer, and then, of course, they tell you that the only thing you can do is chemo and radiation, both of which cause cancer. But it was just amazing to me. Talk about a Jew idea. They have different graphs in here about the markups for the drugs that they give to people via chemotherapy. And they're taking drugs, let's see, let me give an example here. A drug that costs $60 and charging $4,500 for a dose of this drug, irinotecan. For people with colon and rectal cancer. So talk about a markup from $60 to $4,500. And then, of course, the people's insurance doesn't even cover that. So not only are they killing you with their chemo, but your insurance doesn't cover the entire killing. So you end up having to pay, you know, $15,000 out of pocket. And it talks about a number of people that, you know, just wipe out all of their savings and things of that nature. And they're going to die anyway. And this is the perfect Jew medical, you know, technique, as far as I'm concerned. Cancer industry is at the top of the food chain in terms of what they're doing to people health-wise.
Yeah, I think last time I was on, we talked about that young Marine, ex-Marine, where he was, Brandon Robb in Virginia.
Right.
Now, I mean, this is a pretty remarkable story, and we really can't forget it because it's a big help to us what he experienced. He went online with his sister and I guess a cousin or a friend or somebody. They had a kind of a small Facebook, whatever you call that thing, meeting thing, talking about 9/11 and putting the lyrics of protest songs online. So it was on Facebook, and all of a sudden, while they're having a barbecue, I think he was in his shorts and bare feet and no shirt. Cops and feds, Secret Service, FBI came to his house, and the FBI said, you know, Brandon, we're concerned about you because of the things you've been putting on Facebook. I said, really? Yeah, I mean, what's in your mind? You know, why are you doing this? And he tried naively, because he's a very naive person. He'd been in Iraq and Afghanistan for two tours. God knows what he did over there.
Yeah.
As a Marine. But he naively tried to discuss this with these guys. And the local cops enjoyed about all that they could stand, so they knocked him down and put the handcuffs on him. And the feds are saying, Brandon, we're concerned about you. You're not under arrest, and we're very concerned about you. As he was taken away in a squad car. And he was taken to, I guess, the VA, because he's a veteran, and put in and given a psych evaluation of 15 minutes long, and then ordered to undergo 30 days of psychological, psychiatric evaluation. Well, luckily for him, his mother got online and raised hell, and somehow it came to the attention of John Whitehead in the Rutherford Institute, which is a civil rights law firm in Virginia. And Whitehead got involved very quickly and investigated also and talked to a journalist in Virginia who said, yeah, I've been looking into this, and you won't believe this, but average in Virginia is 20,000 people a year are being picked up and sent to psych wards.
Yeah.
And Whitehead was incredulous, and it turned out that that was like in the 17th of August. And at that point, 20 people in Chesterfield County in Virginia had already been picked up and disappeared. They called a civil commitment. And most of these people are veterans, you know, they're mostly veterans. Because the Jews are very uneasy about veterans now. They know that the veterans have seen and done some terrible things for the Jews in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere.
Exactly. Yep.
So they want them neutralized. They want them fully under control. Now, Brandon's lawyer got a restraining order or an order to have him released, luckily, because they'd taken him to another VA hospital 3.5 hours away from home, so that neither his family nor his attorneys could really talk to him easily. And hours before a disaster happened, the order from the judge came down to have him released. It's after a week in custody in a psych ward. But in those hours before his actual release, a psychiatrist came into his cell, pulled out a chair and sat down and said, Brandon, I'm going to brainwash you. Brandon said, you're what? Yeah, he said, I'm going to medicate you forcibly. Well, luckily, the order to release him came out before this could be done. But, I mean, can you imagine what this, I mean, it would have been a chemical lobotomy. God knows what
exactly.
He would have been like after that. So.
Exactly. That's what the psychiatrists do. They're basically doing chemical lobotomies, at the orders or, you know, whatever instigation of the people that are trying to neutralize anyone that's dangerous. And, of course, the veterans are some of the most dangerous for the reasons that you stated. Matter of fact, I realized that the soldiers that come back with PTSD are the ones that have a conscience, and they have to relive what they did every day. And that's why they have these nightmares and are diagnosed with PTSD. And, of course, once that happens, they take away their weapons. The psychopaths, who have no problem with it, they come back and they become police officers, become SWAT team people, and then continue to do what they did over there here.
Right. So, I don't know what Brandon would do today. Now, he couldn't have shot anybody, you know, to defend himself because he doesn't own any guns.
Right.
It's kind of hard to believe an ex-Marine doesn't own any guns, but as I said in my piece the other day, maybe he's sick of guns after what he did overseas. But we have to face the fact that this could happen to us as well. And the only recourse we have is to shoot anybody. I mean, if you see, like in Brandon's case, several cars come up with guys in civilian clothes and cops in uniform, you might as well start shooting, because it's not going to end well. You're not going to have a happy ending. They take you in for a psych evaluation and then a chemical lobotomy. You're going to become a vegetable. So it's time to start shooting.
Yeah, you're better off getting a bullet between the eyes, in my opinion. And that's how I feel as well. There was a YouTube video that went viral recently. A grandmother, 76 years old, her grandson allegedly had a few pot plants on her property, and some SWAT team broke into her house. She had two strokes and a knee replacement. They tackled her and put her on the ground while shooting her pet dog, not giving it a kill shot, but just enough of a shot where it would run all over the house screaming, bleeding everywhere before it finally died. And that's what's going on here in America.
Yeah, so we have to be ready, willing, and able to shoot these guys when they come, because they're going to come. And there's no getting around it. If you're a freedom fighter, if you're a freedom lover, and you make the mistake of expressing this tendency or idea, they're going to come. They're doing it in Virginia to the tune of 20,000 people a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, we wouldn't have known about this if it hadn't been for Brandon Robb. We wouldn't have known what's going on. It was a great service that he did for us by revealing this crime. So, you have to start shooting. You know, I don't ever complain about anything. I don't ever analyze the situation without giving a suggestion, a solution. And the solution is that it must become way too dangerous for these thugs to try to do a civil commitment or an arrest. No, if you know you don't have a legal problem, you haven't robbed any banks, you're not behind in your child support, you might as well start shooting, because there's no other way to deal with this. We saw what happened in Waco, and this is the disaster for the government that they don't want repeated. This was a total catastrophe when the eccentric people in the church in Waco did not lie down and roll over as they were expected to do, but instead started shooting when these thugs rolled up and attacked the church. They got attacked back. They got counterattacked. Four of them were killed. And I don't know how many were wounded. And after several hours, these thugs had to put their hands up and ask and beg if they could come in and get their wounded.
Yeah.
And the good people inside made the mistake of saying, well, okay, fair enough.
Right.
They should have opened up and killed the rest of them, as we see, what happened 51 days later. They were all killed in the most dreadful fashion I can imagine. So you might as well start shooting. And in fact, I highly recommend it. Now, these thugs, they don't want any trouble. They want to kill us, but they don't want to fight us. They don't like the idea of that. So you got to make it clear in your personal life. And we got to get a crew of guys here in the valley that I live in Idaho. They've made it clear to the sheriff here, the guy from New York, that he tries anything, they're gonna kill him and everybody else involved. So we have peace here. We don't have any nonsense. And this is the only way. It's the only way to live under these very difficult times we're in. Until we can start the revolution, which I'm trying to start, violent revolution against the stinking federal government and the Federal Reserve and the Anti-Defamation League and AIPAC and all the nasty control agencies that we're up against. We have to overthrow these. They have to be wiped out. But in the meantime, we also have to worry about cops coming for us and doing this civil commitment, putting us in the loony bin. The only way to stop it is to be willing, ready, and able to shoot them on sight.
Yeah, because I've rotated through the loony bins when I was a medical student, and I'm here to tell you, I would much rather take a bullet than end up in a place like that. It's not a pleasant way to go, and you will go, but they will experiment on you and they will do all kinds of heinous things in the process. And of course, that's where we have to realize that the cops are working for these agencies. I mean, they have become the enemy. whenever I see a cop on the road, you know, I look upon that cop as a predator. You know, they're stopping people because they're going 5 miles over the speed limit. What else are they doing in their, you know, daily work life? You know, we know the answer to that question. So I agree with you, totally agree with you. And I never thought I would reach this point because I was always a pacifist. But I view this as self-defense. Anybody that does not defend themselves or their families, what are you? You're basically just a willing piece of meat. That's what, you know, happy to go out. Because of a law, some cop's going to come to your house and say, okay, your grandson's growing a pot plant, so therefore we have the right to break down your door, kill your dog, and tackle you, and give you a trauma that you'll probably never recover from. Who wants to live in a country like that? If things do not change, and I totally agree with you, there's going to have to be a lot of people of conscience who say, no, it's not going to happen, because they're not going to be as willing to come to houses and break down the door and taser granny and do all the things that they're doing if some people take action. Because in reality, they're all cowards. You know, they get all their gear on and they've got their AK whatevers and they're armed to the teeth and they're protected by quote unquote the law. We have people here in North Carolina be killed by the cops on a regular basis. Never, never do they get charged with a crime. It's always quote unquote warranted. You know, but we have people going to jail for stealing a few loaves of bread or whatever. This is insane.
Yeah, now we had a guy, a wonderful old guy, back in, when was it, the 80s, named Gordon Call. K-A-H-L, Gordon Call, in North Dakota. People may have forgotten the story of Gordon Call. They made an unfortunate movie about him with Rod Steiger, of all people, a Jew, playing Gordon Call. But the reality was that Gordon Call was a farmer in North Dakota, and he ran afoul of the IRS, and they demanded money from him, and he said no, and he was sent to prison. Well, he got out of prison finally, went back to his farming in North Dakota, and he'd go down to Texas, I think, in the winter months and farm down there, and then he'd go back to North Dakota and farm in the regular season. But he had spoken with farmers and other people in North Dakota and Texas and all around the country about the banking fraud, lending of credit. And he was counseling people on how to deal with this. Now, Gordon Call became the target of the U.S. Marshals, and they wanted to arrest him. But because he carried a rifle with him every place he went, they were afraid. And the U.S. Marshal Service headquarters in Washington instructed the local U.S. Marshals in North Dakota to leave him alone. This was not going to end well. But those guys in Fargo, they knew better. And they were all Freemasons, and Gordon Call had been criticizing Freemasonry in his lectures. So these Freemasons in the Marshal Service, they were pretty mad. And they wanted him dead. They wanted him, they just wanted to kill him. So they set up a roadblock as he was coming back from church, one morning. And Gordon Call wasn't driving, but he was in one guy's car, and they rolled into this roadblock, and these Masonic marshals started screaming obscenities at Gordon. Of course, his nice old wife, I met her, she was down in the floorboards of the car. It was a terrifying experience. And his son, Yori, was in a different car. He got out, stood over by a telephone pole, but he traded jackets with his father, and the Masons in the Marshal Service were a little confused by who was who, because they'd been told by an informant that Gordon was wearing a certain color coat. Well, now Yuri had the coat on. So they opened up on Yuri, and he was about almost fatally wounded. He dropped down face first in the mud. Well, you only have to shoot his son once to get old Gordon PO'd. So he produced his Mini 14 rifle and opened up on these gangsters and killed a couple of them, wounded everybody else, gathered up his almost mortally wounded son, and took him to the clinic, left him there thinking he was dying, which he thought was, but by some miracle he pulled through, and Gordon went on the lam, and he was at large for several months until I'm back.
Okay, yeah, there we go. I mean, I was expecting interference earlier, but apparently this story has activated the psychopath, so please continue. So he went on the lam. Continue with the story.
He was staying with some some supporters down in Arkansas, and the federal government found out through an informant where he was, and they attacked the house and killed him. And it was a terrible, terrible ending. I think he was tired, because if he had been as on his game as he was up in North Dakota, those killers that came in for him wouldn't have had a chance, because Gordon Call was one tough guy and a hell of a mm-hmm. shot. And that's what we have to be. We have to be just like Gordon Call, and be willing, ready, and able to open up on these guys at the drop of a hat, because they are a bunch of stone killers, and they want to kill us. They just don't want to fight us. They don't want another Gordon Call deal, and they don't want another Waco.
Exactly. Okay, I just got a message. We have a caller. Caller, please give us your comment or question.
Hello, Dr. Carly and JB. This is Bill calling.
Yes.
Hi, if I may, I'd like to revisit at the beginning where JB was talking about some of the reasons why Hitler was an enemy of the Jewish monopolies, because there's some very good information in there. There's a lot of reasons why, from my research, there's quite a few reasons why the Jews opposed Hitler. Two that are pertinent to what JB was talking about. One is Hitler strove to eliminate the Jewish monopoly on money and credit creation, as J.B. said. Also, a tandem with that was the elimination of the Jewish usurping, blood-sucking middlemen. And how Hitler did achieve that was by, as J.B. said, creating their own domestic currency and leveraging that against the productivity of the very productive German workman and workwoman. And the reason Hitler came up with this, partially, he did research what worked for Lincoln with the Civil War. Hitler duly noted America's accomplishment by issuing their own currency. And then he had the recent example of the Jewish-dominated Weimar Republic, which Hitler came on the heels of. What happened with the Jewish-dominated Weimar Republic was a destruction of the Jewish economy through hyperinflation. Hyperinflation was the debasement of the German currency. Inflation is debasement. Inflation is money printing created by the central banks. And don't think that our founding fathers did not know of the perfidiousness of them in during their time and up to their time. For in 1792, our Congress enacted the Coinage Act of 1792. There's a lot of sections to that, but if anyone Googled it and just focused on Section 19 of that act, we would see that on our books is this: anyone who is responsible for the debasement of our currency is subject to the death penalty. That act is still in our books.
Wow.
So all this inflation that we experience in our economy, in our country, is the result of money printing, as I've established, Dr. Carley, and that anyone who studies finance and economics knows. So right now, if we had Congress who was worth their weight in salt, they would apprehend these guys and lock them up and put them on trial for what they are doing is debasing our currency and destroying our country. And the whole reason for this inflation thing and the reason they had this printing money and you're owing more money with usury than what you borrowed and there's no way you can all pay it back, that's how they foreclose on what we've created. They take all their money back, and by default, they take everything we created. This is the Babylonian money system. They've learned this long ago. That's what we're under now. The point is that we have laws on the books. If we had anyone with teeth in them who would enforce the laws, these guys are destroying our country, and it's not, you don't blame it on the weather. You don't blame it on God. The reason this is happening is because of the Jewish central banks.
I just want to comment first. I'm so glad you mentioned that because that is so important, and that's why I always talk about these minions in the District of Criminals. They are committing treason. All of them are committing treason, and they should be hung by the neck until dead, along with all of the banksters. But let me just read a couple of things very important that J.B. Wrote in his amazing essay. Here are three reasons why the banksters must be hanged. Fractional reserves, mortgage fraud, and foreclosure fraud. I will point out that several months ago, and I wonder if this guy is still alive, the controller for the city and county of San Francisco gave a press conference at which he said that mortgage and foreclosure fraud were involved in 100% of all contracts that he and a team of independent auditors had investigated throughout the county. He said that unfortunately for those who had already lost their homes to foreclosure, there was nothing he could do to correct it. But anyone currently in foreclosure, he said carefully, should stay put and not leave. The reason is that titles can no longer be guaranteed and liens and ownership can no longer be proven. Anybody owning a home, are you listening to me? Your title can no longer be guaranteed. Fraud nullifies all contracts no matter when they were written. This is due to the enormous bank fraud known as, quote-unquote, mortgage-backed securities. The criminals at Goldman Sachs and other Jewish dens of iniquity bundled hundreds of thousands of mortgages at a time and then sliced and diced them, selling slices and dices to credulous investors in the Middle East and Asia. The Jews failed to record any of these changes of ownership with any courts, and now virtually no property, especially if it is registered as a MERS, i.e. Mortgage Electronic Registration System, property can be verified or any title guaranteed. MERS represents itself as the mortgages of record for the mortgage industry and is a public-private partnership with the federal government and the Wall Street banksters. So the cancer has spread throughout the entire financial and government architecture. There's no solution other than starting over. This is so important for anybody that believes they own their home to realize, because as Bruce stated in his document, we've heard many situations, it's been reported on mainstream television, that the banks are even going into people that have paid their mortgages off, and they're confiscating their properties as well.
Yes, Dr. Carley, but also there's a flip side to that coin, and that is this. For all the folks who, you know, through their duress and their depressions that they individually are going through, if their house is in foreclosure, as long as the judge isn't paid off, I suppose, the company that is foreclosing on them, if they cannot produce a bona fide title, they cannot enforce foreclosure upon them.
Any comments on that, Bruce?
Well, he's absolutely right. And that's why I wrote that. Because that controller for City and County of San Francisco said that. He said, if you're in foreclosure now, stay put.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You cannot be evicted now.
Yeah, now you can live there rent-free, guys.
Exactly.
But just the idea that they were allowed to do this, it's just so mind-boggling. There are so many examples of this. You know, back in the day, when the stock market started, you know, you would buy stock and you would actually allegedly have a piece of the company, and yes, you would make money or lose money based on how the company did. And then these psychopaths invented this idea of derivatives, which I actually tried to learn what a derivative is. It's like a complicated calculus formula that they came up with, which is such a scam. You don't own anything. You own whatever.
Witchcraft.
Yeah, you own this mathematical conglomeration of garbage that they came up with, and anybody that they hoodwinked into purchasing these things, you know, basically, you know, as the Jewish banksters do, they control everything. They control the stock market. They can, you know, controlling the housing industry. They create their bubbles. They pop their bubbles. They steal all the houses they can, and then the whole process starts over. This is how they operate.
And Dr. Carley, that is the end result of them benefiting from what Amschel Rochel said at the beginning. I don't care who makes the laws of any country. Allow me to control the issuance of money and credit, and unstated is, at the end of it all, I will own it all. And that's what
right.
they've done. And is it any wonder why the richest people in the world are the Jews? Because you know what? They control all the banks.
Right.
And if you and I controlled the banks, you know, if we were like them, we'd own everything too.
Right. Well, and they also control health, and that's my primary area of interest.
Yes.
Because, of course, they're destroying our health, they're corrupting our very genetic structure, and so all of these areas are very important. And the courts. I mean, if the judges that, you know, sing their Kol Nidre on Yom Kippur, we're not dismissing cases of merit in regards to the corruption and fraud going on, this would not be allowed. So their tentacles are everywhere. And that is the reason.
Yes.
Go ahead.
And if Benjamin Franklin's admonition to the founders of this country was heeded, we would be where Germany would have been if we didn't all pounce on Germany. And that is a brilliant, vibrant, healthy ethno-state.
Mm-hmm. Well, Benjamin Franklin was a Mason and a pedophile. But apparently he did make some statements because, see, that's one thing that they love to do. They love to put it right in our face what they're doing, and then they know that they have total control over everything, so nothing will change until the people wake up.
But then they were given their duly, their notices of grace. Therefore, hey, you are warned and you did nothing about it, so obviously silence is consent.
Right. Any comments, Bruce?
Yeah, speaking of Franklin, excuse me, and you asked for a definition of scrip earlier. Now, I left out of that piece the fact that in the colonies, the colonials used what they called colonial scrip, which
yes.
is just an alternate form of currency, you know, a secondary form of currency. When Franklin went over to England as the ambassador, he said, he was asked by the British, well, how is it that you people over there are so productive and so successful? He said, well, it's because of our money system is colonial scrip that we use. And no interest is paid on it. It's just issued in the proper
weights and measures.
Ratios. And so there's no inflation or deflation. It's just properly and judiciously issued by the states. And the Bank of England guys were horrified at this, and they immediately went to the Parliament and demanded the colonial scrip be outlawed in the colonies,
yes.
which it was. and they were forced to go back into the pound sterling. And they could not survive under that. And Franklin said that was really probably the main reason for the war, was the outlawing of colonial scrip.
Yes, JB, that's what my research says, too. That it wasn't the taxation. It wasn't the Boston Tea Party. It was the fact that the Bank of England took away the colony's ability to issue their own credit and currency.
Exactly. Now, as you see, if you read that piece that I wrote, the Tribune's, I paid the price for helping a guy with foreclosure. I went to jail. I supplied him a weapon, or two weapons, actually, to hold off the SWAT team that came, and I was there when the SWAT team came.
Wow.
And I was, you know, I paid the price for helping this guy. But I'm convinced, and I was, that was back in 1983 or 84, and I'm convinced now that this is the only method, though. We have to become more organized, and foreclosures, because, I mean, even though the controller for San Francisco is saying, you know, stay put, the banks get the cops to break the law.
Right.
So at some point we have to be determined, doesn't matter if they break the law, we're going to be the law. We're going to take the law into our own hands where it belongs, and we're not going to knuckle under to these gangsters.
So you've got to be ready. Yes.
You got to be ready to do what I did. I mean, it's going to come down to this. In various places in the country, because the bankers are desperate. Now, the whole system is collapsing. They're going to try to hold on to their power and their money, but we're not going to let them do this. But the cops are going to be in the middle. Unfortunate for them, but that's just the way it is in life. If they're going to support and enforce bad law, then they're going to pay the price.
And they're doing that by their own volition. And they're doing that by their own volition, JB. They wanted to join the police force, and they went in there with open minds and open eyes, and they and what's before them, they're free to see. And if they don't see it, then they're going to be the victims of it.
Shame on them.
Yes, sir. And that's like what Dr. Carley, she several times talked about, that poor old lady, that 70-something-year-old lady who got beat up by the cops, her face thrown on the bathroom floor, and she watched her dog get shot. Shame on those police, and shame on that community for letting those police show their faces anywhere in a law-abiding community. Those cops should not be allowed anywhere to conduct business. Don't buy your groceries there. Don't accept their dry cleaning. Don't let them sit in your bars. That community should be outraged at that behavior and that treatment, and those people who do that sort of thing should not be welcome in civil society.
I'll go farther than that. They're going to have to be hit hard with all the force and violence that they're willing to use against us. I would have to say at this point we're all Black Panthers now, and that's just the way it is. We're going to have to fight and kill these guys because they are traitors to everything we believe in, and they're traitors to the actual law.
And they're traitors to what is good in this world.
Yes.
Well, and not only that, but it amazes me, if you're in a community, and in that community, I'm sure that the people must know the names of the cops that did this. And
yes, ma'am.
What makes them believe that they're not next? I mean, it
yes.
should go without saying that they should be excoriated. I mean, they should be, you know, tarred and feathered, whatever, at the very minimum, for what they have done to this grandmother. And, see, unfortunately, that's what we're going through, is that people have this go-along-to-get-along mentality. Well, you know, I don't want to do anything because, you know, I don't want to raise a problem for myself, not realizing that by not doing anything, they're actually causing a problem for themselves. That's the most important message I'm trying to get out to people. We have an energy going now. If any of you know about potential and kinetic energy, potential energy is the energy stored. And that's how I look at it. We have energy storing as people are waking up. Well, kinetic energy is energy of motion. We have to take action against these monsters. We can no longer just say, oh, gee, isn't that too bad? Glad it wasn't me. Because
yeah.
it will be you. Go ahead.
That says it all.
Go ahead, JB.
Well, again, I mean, I think we need to role models, and the top role model I can offer is Gordon Call. He did the right thing at the right time. The guy was a veteran of World War II. He'd said that he'd had to shoot down American fighter planes that mistakenly attacked his airplane. He said he regretted it, but it was either them, you know, the fighter pilot or his crew. And so he said he regretted it, but that's the way it is. You got to defend yourself. Doesn't matter. And so if it's American cops, American marshals, American FBIs, American whatever, if they join the dark side, they got to go. They're not going to be allowed to live because they're going to kill us. I mean, that's they don't care.
They laugh about it. They think it's big fun.
They bump their fists when they slam these women into the asphalt face first. You know, we got some real nasty characters walking around in uniform, and the uniforms are paid for by us. The guns, the cars, the bulletproof vests are all paid for by us. These guys work for us. We're the boss. And if we don't like what's going on, we make changes. So I'm saying we got to make some changes here.
Yeah, that's what's really sick is that we're paying for this. I mean, we're paying for all of this. And you know, as they're bankrupting the country for their false wars, and now we have, you know, the drum rolls being beaten to go to war with Iran. You know, I had to laugh. There was an article in the paper today, you know, Senator Lieberman, a prominent Zionist who thankfully is leaving the Senate, although who knows what he's got up his sleeve next. But he's talking about the cyber attacks that were launched against Bank of America and J.P. Morgan Chase, admitting that the United States and Israel launched a cyber attack against Iran to disable their nuclear enrichment equipment.
Yes.
And I forget the name of that attack. The Zucksnet or Zucksnet, something like that. But what do they expect? You know, this is terrorism. You're launching a cyber terrorism attack, and then you're going to cry if it's even Iran doing it. I wouldn't be surprised if this is another false flag, that the U.S. or Israel's behind, you know, J.P. Morgan and Bank of America's websites going down so that they can blame Iran. But what do they expect? You know,
well, that underscores their inherent psychopathy. If you do it the way that the American sheep will do it and just keep your head down and ignore and try to ignore it and block it out and live day by ignoring everything and just carrying on, then they see you as weak and sheep as something to be fleeced and ultimately butchered and slaughtered and Jewish ritual murdered. And then if you oppose them, then they cry anti-Semite against you, and they draw the war drums against you. No matter what, just existing in the same dimension with them renders you at odds and in opposition to them because of their inherent evil inclinations. It's just simple as that.
Right. And that's why it's so important for people to see the big picture, and that is my intention, is to help them do that. Because we are at a critical time in history. We are at the precipice of total destruction of our planet, our DNA, everything. And now is the time. You have to decide, are you with the psychopaths or are you with humanity? And, you know, your actions should be based on who you're with. And if you think that you can make a deal with the devil and come out ahead, well, the joke's going to be on you because
evil's evil even to itself.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yes,
all
ma'am.
Right. I thank you so much for your excellent call, Bill. We're actually out of time. I will contact Bruce and find out when he can be on again next month. And people, please tell everybody to listen to the archive of this show. It should be up latest by tomorrow. On the Light of Day Radio Show.com and grow a backbone and take a stand for good and for everything that matters. Thank you so much, Bruce, for another excellent show, and we'll be talking to you about whenever you can be on next month. Okay. Any closing comments?
No, I think we've said it all.
All right. Okay, folks, we'll be back next week and next month with JB. Thank you so much for listening, and as I said, please spread the word. And once again, let me mention that the views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by the staff or management of These Changing Times. It is the views of me, Bruce Campbell, and callers. Thank you very much, and try to have a good day living in hell. Bye-bye.